Welcome to Making Life Easy, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Gwen Gastar.
Well, good evening. So happy to be back on the air. Been gone for a couple of weeks. Been kind of under the weather, you know, a little hoarse, couldn't talk, and having all those sinus issues. So I'm really happy to be back. I'm excited about the show today. Welcome to Making Life Easy with Gwen Gastar, of course, on the Tough Talk Radio Network. I am your host, and I invite you to listen in every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. If you miss the show, of course, you can always go to my archives and click on the same link, and you'll be able to pick up the show as well. You can also call in during the show, speak live with me and my guests by calling 347-989-1363, and if you press the number 1, you can get in on the conversation. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on my show, please go to my website at www.makinglifeeasywithgwengastar.com and complete the registration form, and my producer will contact you from there and set up a scheduled time. So I look forward to hearing from you. Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, before I bring my guest on, I want to talk about the importance of our children and how, you know, we have a love for our children. We don't want anyone else to bother our children. And surely we don't ever want them to get out of our eyesight and for us not to be able to put our hands on them as we need to. So it's important, of course, that, you know, we keep close, you know, contact, connection with our children. But so many things happening today, we want to just be sure that, you know, we are in communication. No matter how old they get, we still need to have some type of, you know, rule of calling in, and especially if they become teenagers, we want to make sure you call in at a certain time. We need to know where you are at all times. So today our guest is going to talk to us a little bit about his book. His name is Dave Moore. He is a chaplain and the author of the book, The Father's Love. Actually, The Father's Love is an award-winning, amazing story that's a true story that he's going to talk to us about. So I want to bring him on. Dave, are you there? Dave, are you there? Hello?
Yes, I'm here now.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for having me, Gwen.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you want to be on the show, and let's talk about your book. And I stated that the title of the book is The Father's Love. So what I want you to do is kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe your family, you know, let us know, get a little comfortable with you. So we'll know a little bit about what brought you up to writing, you know, such a book. So kind of give us a little background on yourself.
Okay. I'm married. My wife, Dorinda, and I, when we met, she was in the midst of a divorce, and she had two boys. And I had a son from a previous relationship. And so when we met, we decided after a few years to get married. And so then we had a blended family. Both of us working, my wife working and me working and raising three athletic boys that love to play sports. And so we were very, very busy with our boys and enjoyed that, you know, staying busy with them.
Right. Okay, so in doing all of that, you said you had a son and she had two boys.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and then we became this blended family here. So did everything work out and the boys got along and all that great stuff?
Yeah, they got along pretty good. I think as good as any boys would, and
any
you know they, is. Yeah, they had their ups and downs, but mostly got along good, and you know enjoyed playing together. Whatever season it was either baseball, basketball, or football season. So our boys were always playing outside and enjoying that. So yeah, we had a good blended family.
Okay, well that's great. Okay, I want to talk about the book, The Father's Love. Tell us a little bit about what that's all about. I mean, a father's love, what does that mean?
Okay, well, The Father's Love is the true story of my son, my son, David, our youngest son, his disappearance. Mm-hmm. And it was he was a freshman in college, and it's a story of my search for him, which would be a cross-country search. And how, in the end, I found my faith in God, and it was a very difficult time in our life. and as any parent could just imagine, it's a parent's worst nightmare.
Okay, so now, searching for your son, do you mean because it was a previous relationship or he was actually missing?
Well, it was December, and we were planning Christmas. He, like I said, he was our youngest son, and he had just started college. He was a freshman in college, and
right.
It was the 1st of December. We were planning Christmas. Everything seemed right with the world. And it was a Friday afternoon. I came home from work, and our older two boys had already moved out on their own, so it was just my wife and I and my son, David. And when I came home from work on Friday, my son wasn't home yet. My wife was still at work. And a few hours later, my wife came home, and when she noticed a yearbook of my son's out on her computer desk. And she
mm-hmm.
took that yearbook and went to replace it back in his room. And when she did, she found a letter on his bed. And she brought the letter to me, and as soon as I saw her, I knew something terrible was wrong. Her face was pale, and she had a look
right.
of fear in her eyes. And she
right.
handed me the letter, and the letter would go on to tell us how my son David was flunking out of college, and he couldn't face us with this failure. And he
mm-hmm.
said his car would be parked at the Greyhound bus station in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which was around a 20-minute drive from our home. So we
mm-hmm.
hurriedly drove there, and when we got there, I ran to the door and jerked the door, and the door was locked. It was now 6:30 in the evening. The bus station had closed at 6, so we started circling the streets looking for his car, and a few streets
mm-hmm.
over, we found his car. So we knew that he had gotten on a bus. And we knew he didn't have much money, and so we knew that wherever he got off of that bus, he would be broke and he would be homeless.
Wow. So this is something he walked away from the house, not someone abducted him.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
He walked away because
yes.
the fear of saying about the school,
Yes, he was afraid to face us with this failure. He had been hiding it for months. He had gotten behind in college, and he kept thinking that he had the opportunity to catch up, and he couldn't do it. He never shared that with us, and this was the 1st of December, and grades would be coming out in just a few weeks, and he
right.
realized that he was going to fail, and he couldn't, in my mind, I always thought my son could come to me and talk to me, but in his mind, he felt that he couldn't, so he felt like his only option was to run. And so that's what he did. He left us a letter, he jumped on a bus, and he just left.
Wow. So how long was it before you found him?
Well, it was a cross-country search that began night.
Mm-hmm.
It went from Ann Arbor, Michigan my first clue was that he had went to Dayton, Ohio, was a 3.5-hour drive away. And I went to Dayton, Ohio, and I would find out the next morning that he wasn't there. And then that the trip would take me through Atlanta, Georgia, which is where he had actually purchased a ticket to. And
mm-hmm.
then when I couldn't find him in Atlanta, Georgia, I would come back to Michigan to file a missing police report. And the search would go on for 5 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So
the worst
five days,
believe me, the worst 5 days of my life.
I can only imagine. I can only
yeah.
imagine because... You know at that point that he's hurting because he knows that he's disappointed you. And then, of course, after that, after he's leaving, he knows that you must be looking for him. And you must be scared to death, not
yeah.
knowing exactly where he is. Such as I stated earlier, we always want to be able to put our hands on our children.
Yeah.
No matter how far they are, we still want to know that this is where you are and to be able to communicate with him. So I can only imagine, it gives me chills, to think if I had, one of my kids had walked away.
Right. Right. And me, at that point in my life, I'd always been a pessimist, so I was thinking the worst. If he's desperate enough to leave like this, is he desperate enough to harm himself?
Right.
Has someone lured him away? Even though he's 18, I felt that he was a young 18, somewhat sheltered all of the years of his life. So, yeah,
right.
I'm thinking the worst. Will I ever see my son again?
Wow. That had to have been, such a hurting feeling, a scary feeling. I can only imagine, such as I said, if it were one of my own, and I'm sure that you know, my listeners, you put yourself in that same position of your child walking away, and you just don't know where they are. You know,
no, and really time just stands still. Nothing else matters. I really stopped eating and drinking, I wasn't concerned with my work. My wife, when I left searching for my son, my wife took care of that. She called into my work for me, but I mean that was like one of the last thoughts on my mind. Consumed by it with fear.
Right. You just can't think, you know, what else is important, because this is most important at this point, is to find him. So I understand that. So now you had to wait, 24 hours before they would report it was a missing person, or did they listen immediately?
Well, when I first left Ypsilanti, Michigan, which is where I live, when I first left, I wasn't even concerned with filing a missing police report. I just, we began to call everyone we knew. We called all of our family and friends, and we had a Rolodex with a lot of my son's friends' names and numbers on that, and we began to call his friends. And and everyone at first thought this was some kind of a prank, that David would never do anything like this. And but then we got a hold of his girlfriend. We had left a message on her phone, and she called us back. And she said that she felt like something had been wrong with him, but he hadn't shared any of this with her. But he had mentioned the city of Dayton, Ohio. And so that's when we got our first clue. We got that about 9:30 at night. And so that's when I decided that, you know, if he's gone to Dayton, I have to go there. So I filled my truck up. I stopped at the bank and got money, even though I'd got my paycheck that day. I stopped and got more money because I had no idea how long I'd be gone, what I would need, you know, money for. And I just headed for Dayton, Ohio, with really no plan, just that if my son's there, I have to go there.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That had to have been an awful ride, because your mind is going and you don't know what to think and where could he be. I mean, once you get to Dayton, then what, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that, again, here I'm heading there, but I really had no plan. About halfway to Dayton, my wife called me, and her and my son David's girlfriend, Ashley, had been going through his room trying to figure out what he had taken with him. What he was wearing, and in doing that, they came across a phone number in his trash can, and they looked the phone number up on the internet, and they found out that it was the phone number to a homeless shelter in Dayton, Ohio. So they called me on my cell phone. I was about halfway to Dayton when they called, and they gave me this news. And so now I'm like, I'm like kind of on cloud nine. I'm thinking this is where he has to be, and so I actually started speeding up. And I wanted to get there quicker. And so I arrived right after midnight in Dayton. I saw a police officer on the side of the road. I pulled over and I talked to him. And he took me to the bus, straight to the bus station. We arrived there about 12:20, almost 12:30. And I went up to the door. And again, the bus station had just closed at midnight. So again, I just missed them closing. But I told him about the homeless shelter that my wife had given me the phone number for. And by this time, they had found the address. And so it was straight down the road from the bus station. So he took me to the homeless shelter. I got out, walked up to the door, and there was a buzzer. I rang the buzzer, told the gentleman over the intercom what I was doing. He asked me my son's age, and I told him 18. And he told me that because my son was 18, he couldn't tell me if he was in there or not. But he said, at 7 in the morning, he said, we make everyone leave. And so if your son's in here, he'll come out. So I sat outside of the homeless shelter until 7 o'clock in the morning. And when everyone had come out, my son wasn't in there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow, that is, I mean, I'm nervous just listening to this, you know? So, it puts you on edge, you know, being a parent. I can only imagine your heart is just going so fast. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking about, you know, your travels and finding your son. So we're looking for David at this point. So give us a call at 347-989-1363, and we will be right back after commercial break.
Are you concerned about your job? Concerned about losing it? Concerned about being repositioned in the workplace? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, or even if you just want to be a part of the workplace improvement revolution, then join the conversation with Charlie and his guests every Monday at 7 p.m. Central on Corporate Talk with Charlie Labosco, right here on the Tough Talk Radio Network.
As a practical, interactive, solution-focused therapist, Dr. Alan Simberg's treatment approach is to provide support and practical feedback to help clients resolve current challenges and long-standing patterns. With sensitivity and compassion, Dr. Simberg helps clients find solutions to a wide range of life challenges and psychological issues. Dr. Simberg specializes in a number of areas, including addiction and recovery solutions, family, parenting, and relationship issues, depression and anxiety, spiritual counseling, and more. Blending conventional and complementary approaches, Dr. Simberg draws on a variety of styles and techniques to incorporate what will be most helpful for each client. Find out more information or contact Dr. Alan at alansimberg.com. Let Dr. Alan Simberg help to enhance your life through effective therapies.
Having a daughter is one of the most precious gifts a mother will receive in a lifetime. Sometimes it helps to have a roadmap in the parenting process. The lesson plan written by Gwen Gistarb is a dependable tool that will assist you on your journey. It includes 10 interesting segments of poems, metaphors, short stories, lessons, and activities that mothers and daughters will find exciting and informative. The lesson plan is available at iUniverse.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, and most other internet bookstores across the country. To find out more about Gwen Gistarb and the lesson plan, go to GwenGistarb.net. Thank you, and enjoy the gift of your daughter. She is God's gift for a lifetime.
Okay, this is Making Life Easy with Gwen Gistarb. Today I have Dave Moore. He's a chaplain and author of the book, The Father's Love, and we're talking about the journey of Dave trying to locate his son, who has kind of just walked away. So now, Dave, at this point, you guys, you waited until 7 o'clock in the morning, and son did not come out, so what's next?
Well, I'd like to just back up just a second here because I'd like to tell you about what was going on that night while I was waiting outside the shelter. As I was waiting out there, and I was out there, going to be out there around 6 hours, and it was around 10 degrees outside. While I was parked outside of the shelter, like I said earlier, I was straight down the street from the bus station. And every time I would see somebody throughout the night walking, I would think that, you know, I wondered if that could be my son. And so I would hurriedly drive down there and check to see if it was my son. And when it wasn't, I would turn around through the bus station, and I would come back in front of the homeless shelter and park again. And each time I would go through the bus station, I kept seeing this very large box in the back of the bus station. And it kept coming into my mind. I kept thinking, you know, is it possible my son is in that box? But then I kept dismissing it, thinking, no, he couldn't be in there. And so I'd just go back to the homeless shelter and park again. Well, this would play out several times that night. But finally, about 6:30 in the morning, about 30 minutes before the shelter was to release everyone, I saw someone walking again. And so I hurriedly drove down there. Again, it wasn't my son. And as I turned around through the bus station, I saw the box again. And I thought, I have to know. So it was still dark out, and I pointed my truck lights towards the box. And I got out, and I walked over to the box. And it had a lid on it, and I lifted the lid off. And when I did, it was dark inside of the box. But as my eyes began to focus in the darkness, I said, David, and I said my son's name out loud, and all of a sudden I saw movement inside of the box, and then a face turned up and looked at me, and it was an older man, probably in his 60s, and it looked like he had several layers of clothes on to keep warm, and he just looked up at me with these sad eyes, and he just said no, And it was just such a powerful, humbling moment. And as I walked away from the box, I guess my knees just began to shake, and I just fell down on my knees and just began to cry my eyes out, because it wasn't my son inside of that box, but it was someone else. And it was just a terrible moment to think that, you know, my son could be in that same predicament.
Right, some way else, just maybe not there, but
yes,
somewhere.
Yes.
Because you said, what was the temperature again?
It was 10 degrees.
Oh, wow. I mean, that was just, you know, coming from Houston, for me to have to be outside in 10-degree weather,
yeah,
you know, it would be so, it would just be really difficult. It would be a difficult transition for me. So I can only imagine a person, to, you know, having to sleep under those conditions. You know, I feel sad and, you know, wish I could help people, you know, everywhere, you know. But so now you go back to the car and you go back and park.
And 7 o'clock comes around, and as the homeless people begin to shuffle out of the building, you know, one at a time, I got out of my truck, and as they were all coming out, I kept asking them, one after another, have you seen my son? I kept describing my son to them. I had left home so quick, I hadn't brought a picture with me, but I was describing him to them. And, you know, they were all saying no, they couldn't remember seeing anyone like that. And a couple of them just kind of stood there with me as I began to ask others. And finally, no one else was coming back out. And so together, this one man and this one girl, they walked back to the door with me, and we asked the director of the shelter if anyone else was inside, and he told me no, that there was no one else inside. And so I realized that I had waited outside of that shelter all night long, and my son wasn't there. And and so now I kind of didn't know what to do, but the homeless people told me that they were headed to a day shelter, and that, you know, being 10 degrees outside, that if my son was anywhere in the city, he would probably come to that day shelter. So they asked me to come with them there. And they would take me to it, and they would you know, show me where it was at, and we could look there and see if my son would show up there. So that's what I decided to do, to go there for a few hours, because I knew the bus station opened at 9, so I thought I would stay there for a few hours until the bus station opened, and then maybe I could find something out there.
Wow. You've had a traumatic journey here, you know, especially when, you know, you're hoping, you know, once the, you know, here's the you know, the shelter, and of course, you know, they're saying no, and you can't, you know, you have to wait until 7 o'clock the next morning, and you see the box, and, you know, I know that your heart was just, I'm sure it was in your stomach at that point, and, you know, people don't understand, when your nerves take over, you know, food is the last thing that you're thinking about. Who wants to eat at this point?
Yeah, it, you know, really, so it really was. And but even everything was beginning to take its toll, the fear, being up all night with no sleep and having worked the day before, no food, no water. So, it was all starting to just, you know, catch up to me, and I was really starting to feel it.
Right. So that meant you needed to go and find food to replenish your body here so that you could continue looking. So now, from this point, you say you went to the day shelter.
Day shelter,
And no David.
Well, no, and I went there for a few hours. And the amazing thing was is the homeless man that had been helping me, there was a girl and a guy, but the man stayed with me in the shelter. And he went and got me a sandwich while we were in there and a coffee. And I couldn't eat, but he was so nice. And I had taken this large amount of money with me, and I tried to give him money while I was there, and he wouldn't take it. I mean, I almost tried to force it into his pocket, you know, because he was helping me so much. But he did not want my money. He just, here he was in this desperate situation himself.
Wait, why?
But he, yeah, but he would not take any money from me. He even plugged my cell phone in for me. I had brought my home charger with me. I didn't have a car charger. And so he even plugged my cell phone in for me there to charge my cell phone up. So it was just an amazing thing that this man, who was in a desperate situation himself, really just wanted to help me. So I stayed there until 9 o'clock. As people would shuffle in and shuffle out, I would, you know, always keep my eyes open looking for David, but he never showed up there. And so then at 9 o'clock, I headed to the Greyhound bus station, and I waited in line. And when I finally got to the counter, the gentleman behind the counter was just another amazing person that really helped me out. And he told me he wasn't supposed to do it, but he looked my son's name and where he had left on the bus from Ann Arbor, Michigan at. He looked it all up on the computer, and he found out that his ticket had been purchased to Atlanta, Georgia. So I had spent the night in Dayton thinking my son was there, and his ticket was to Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow.
Which was around an eight-hour drive from where I was at.
Oh, my goodness. So what did you do from there? You just... Get back in the
car.
Well,
initially I called my wife, and I just told her that we decided together that there was really no way that I thought I could make it to Atlanta after being up all night long like that. So we decided that I would come back to Michigan and get some rest and then start the search again. So that's what I did. I decided I'd just head back north to Michigan. I got on the highway, but after only driving about a mile, I just realized that my son was in the opposite direction, and there was no way I could go home. So I just turned around and started heading south towards Atlanta, realizing that if my son was there again, I had to go there to find him. I didn't know how I would make it, but I just knew I had to go. So that's what I did. I headed towards Atlanta.
Okay, so now at this point, knowing how tired you were, did you stop? Did you, you know, try to get some kind of rest before you took this eight-hour journey?
Well, after a little while, again, battling this fear and battling, you know, the depression now and no sleep and I'm getting weak, no food, I'm blaming myself. And I got so desperate and began to blame myself much, so much that started thinking that I was actually even going to take my life. I was going to drive my truck into a bridge. Yeah, it was just I was becoming so depressed, blaming myself. I was thinking this was all my fault. I put too much pressure on my son, and I actually saw a bridge and had sped my truck up and was actually very close to driving my truck into the bridge, and this thought came into my mind, and it was, what will happen to your son if he is alive? What will this do to him? And so just tears just flooding my face, I pulled over on the side of the road and, again, just wept and until about 5-10 minutes, I just sat there and cried. And then the thought came into my mind. My best friend in the world, who lived in Lexington, Kentucky, was only probably less than an hour away from where I was at that time. So I decided I'd call my friend. I called my friend Larry. He was sitting right next to the phone. He told me to come and pick him up, and he would go with me to Atlanta and search for my son. So that's what I did. I picked Larry up, and together we headed to Atlanta, Georgia. And really, that saved my life.
Wow, I mean, you just got me with chills going here.
Yeah.
You know, because I guess I'm anxious to get to the end of this story here, but, of course, I got to hear all of this in order to get there. But, thank God for your friend and that you thought, you know, about where you were at the time and how close you were to him and that he would just drop everything to come and kind of help you. So that kind of relieved you from having to drive.
Yeah, and the amazing thing was is that he told me he was never home on Saturdays, but he was sitting right next to the phone when I called.
Wow. Well, that was supposed to be, you know.
I believe that.
You know, and I'm when things happen, you know, it happens for a reason, and so I think we've all experienced things that, you know, I wasn't even going to go this way or I'll be here or whatever, and things happen. So you just never know. Wow. So that really helped out. So, and from here, I mean, we've got to keep going. Now we're on our way to Atlanta, right? Yeah. So how long was it, about 7 hours?
It was another probably 6 hours or so from Lexington. And but together now, I became really refreshed because my friend was with me now and someone that was helping me to bear this burden.
Right. Well, that makes all the difference when somebody's with you, because you were all alone on this lonely highway. I can only imagine you thinking about committing suicide and thinking, you know, it's all for nothing and it's the end. But I'm so happy that you thought of your son instead of yourself, you know, trying to come out of this depression, thinking of self and how bad you were feeling, that it was all about him. That's why you were on the road. It's about, you know, finding him. So we're gonna take another break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this journey with Larry now and see how we can, you know, finally get to David. Give us a call at 347-989 1363 so that you can get in on the conversation, and we will be right back.
They say everybody has a story. A special few have the gift of bringing stories to life. When you absolutely can't get your book from your head to the written page, you need the special services of a ghostwriter. You will be amazed at what happens when you leave the telling of your story to a writer with the ability to reach inside and capture joy and laughter and pain and transform it all into your words, your raw emotions, just waiting to explode into reality. When waiting to tell your story is no longer an option, trust a ghostwriter that can deliver on a promise. Shirley Carney is that writer you can trust. Contact Shirley at ShirleyWintersCarney@yahoo.com or give her a call at 832-492-4088.
Everyone needs someone special, someone who is ready and willing to listen, someone who will allow you to share your own personal story. That someone is Linda Ballesteros. Power Talk with Linda Ballesteros is an extraordinary forum for empowerment, a safe, warm, and welcoming environment for heartfelt discussion. Networking strategist, motivational speaker, self-improvement advocate, and author, Linda Ballesteros is engaging and approachable. She helps others realize their self-worth and develop their true potential. Get to know and love Linda like so many others who have already experienced the positive, caring atmosphere she cultivates and encourages. She seeks to help people open the gateway to their ultimate self and explore what is possible together. Linda deeply understands the unique person that you are. Discover the energy. Discover the exuberance. Discover Power Talk with Linda Ballesteros. Find out more at powertalkwithlindaballesteros.com.
Having a daughter is one of the most precious gifts a mother will receive in a lifetime. Sometimes it helps to have a roadmap in the parenting process. The lesson plan written by Gwen Gistarb is a dependable tool that will assist you on your journey. It includes 10 interesting segments of poems, metaphors, short stories, lessons, and activities that mothers and daughters will find exciting and informative. The lesson plan is available at iUniverse.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, and most other internet bookstores across the country. To find out more about Gwen Gistarb and the lesson plan, go to GwenGistarb.net. Thank you, and enjoy the gift of your daughter. She is God's gift for a lifetime.
Okay, we're back with Making Life Easy with Gwen Gistarb. My guest today, if you're just tuning in, is Dave Moore. He's a chaplain and author of the book, The Father's Love, and he's telling us about all this interesting journey. This really powerful journey that he's made looking for his son. Dave, let's talk about now. Well, let me kind of interject and ask this question before we continue with you and Larry now on the road. Your wife, I'm sure, she's at the phone. She's sitting there and worried to death about, you know, what you're doing and where is your, you know, where is David and this kind of thing. So how often were you communicating with her?
I was communicating with her quite a bit, and I actually while I was in Dayton, I had told you that the homeless man had helped me plug my cell in. I had run my cell phone battery down, and but then when I went to Lexington to pick my friend Larry up, we went to a Radio Shack while we were there, and I got myself a car charger for my phone.
Right. Okay.
And so at that point, you know, I was able to stay in, you know, not constant contact, but, you know, quite a bit back and forth we were having. And I would check with her, and if anything had happened, she would check with me. And so we were back and forth a lot at that point.
Okay. Okay. All right. So now tell us, you and Larry on the road. So, you know, what goes at this point?
Well, we were, you know, again, we really didn't have a, you know, much of a battle plan. We just knew that, you know, if he had went to Atlanta, which is where his ticket was purchased to, we had to go there. So we went to Atlanta, and my wife had found out, well, actually, the worker at the bus station in Dayton had given us the bus station in Atlanta. There were several of them, but he knew the exact bus station. Then my wife looked up that address and gave us directions right to that bus station. So that's where we planned to begin our search, was at the bus station he arrived at. And so that's what we did. We pulled into that bus station and we got out. And as soon as we got out of that car at that bus station, we were immediately surrounded by a large group of homeless people this time. And these homeless people were like the exact opposite of the ones in Dayton that wanted to help. These ones wanted to confront. And I, at the time, I was like, even though I know it wasn't very smart at the time, I was just like a caged lion. I was looking for my son. I would have done anything. I pulled this huge wad of money out in front of all of them. There were probably 15. And I began to give them all fives and tens and handed them all like something. And I told him, I said, look, I'm searching for my son. And I held that wad of money up. And I said, if you help me find my son, I'll give you all of this. Whoever helps find my son, you can have this. And you talk about some wide eyes. These guys were looking at me. Yeah, and it wasn't very smart, but it was, it was the only thing I knew to do was to try to get everyone involved and try to help find my son while I was there.
Right. I was going to say that was not very smart to do, but I understood, you know, the reasoning behind it. You know, you got to get their utmost attention. And wanting and willing to help. So now you've got all these people helping you at this point.
Yes, and well, we entered the bus station. We talked to the people in the counter, and we searched the whole bus station inside. It was a very large one. There was a lot of people in there, and we went through the whole bus station and looked, and couldn't, and he wasn't there. And then we talked to them at the counter, and they said we should call the Atlanta Police Department. So we did that. We called the Atlanta Police Department, and they sent a detective down. Well, we waited for the detective, and when he finally came, we talked to him, and he made a report. But he told us, he said, you know, it's such a large city, and there's so many homeless people. He said it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. He said, but he gave us a list of shelters in Atlanta, and he, you know, basically wished us good luck. But he told me, he said, eventually your best bet is to go back to Michigan and file a missing police report there. So we thanked him, you know, and we decided that we would begin to search anyway. So that's what we did. We took our list of shelters and we just began to walk and drive. We were searching under bridges. We were searching in boxes like I had in Dayton and knocking on doors at homeless shelters. And just trying to search the whole city. And so that's what we did. We searched all night long. We walked the streets and handed out more money to people all over the place and looked everywhere, but there was no clue. We didn't see one sign of him. No one knew anything of him. None of the shelters had seen him. And so early in the morning of the next day, we finally decided that he could have gotten off a bus anywhere between Ann Arbor and Atlanta, or he could have gotten to Atlanta and began to hitchhike to Florida for all we knew. And it really was like searching for a needle in a haystack. So early in the morning hours, we decided to take my friend Larry back to Lexington and for me to drive back to Michigan and file a missing police report there. So it was one of the hardest things that I ever did in my life was to leave Atlanta thinking my son could be there. But that's what I did. I finally decided to go home and file a missing police report back in Michigan.
Right. Well, basically, I guess you had just, you know, had worn yourself down at that point.
And
it feels like a needle in the haystack. You know, where do you go? Where do you actually look?
Yeah.
Where could he be? Because like you said, he could have gotten off that bus anywhere.
Yeah. And it seemed hopeless.
Okay. So it has to be some good to this story. it has to be coming. So, now you've gone back, you dropped your friend Larry back off, and now you're going to go back home.
Yeah.
So what happens when you get home?
Well, when we get back home, well, when I drop him off, I tried to sleep a few hours in his house. His wife had made me a meal when I came back, and I tried to eat. I still couldn't eat. I tried to lay down, but, you know, even trying to sleep, I was even tormented in my sleep. I would doze off for 10 minutes and wake up in a panic. And finally, after a couple of hours of that, I got up and I woke them up and told them that, you know, I couldn't sleep, so I was just going to drive. And so I got back in my car, and I had about a 5-hour drive from their house to Michigan, and I just headed back to Michigan. and and so got back to Michigan to my wife, and you know, we compared, you know, notes and compared clues, which, you know, or ideas, everything that we could think to do, and we just started the search from there. You know, just you know, it was a few days into this now, but we just decided that, you know, we were going to file the missing police report in Michigan and begin our search from Michigan.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm speechless.
Yeah.
I'm just speechless at this point.
I know.
I mean, you had just worn yourself down at that point,
yeah,
looking. But I do understand, when it's your child.
Yes.
You know, what sleep? You know, you really don't care. You know.
No.
So,
it's you're just tormented, and
right,
you can't get any peace, you know, to sleep, or I still couldn't eat. I mean, it was days now, and I couldn't eat. I mean, I would take a bite of something, and I couldn't even swallow it. And, I mean,
wow.
I had tried to quit smoking, and now I was chain smoking one cigarette after another. Yeah.
Oh,
and,
goodness.
I mean,
yeah.
I was just literally just barely holding on. And so now we're starting the search for Michigan, and I decided to go up to Eastern Michigan. It's Monday morning, up to his college, and talk to the faculty there. And so,
wow,
I did that. We began to post his picture all over campus. We had,
okay,
his picture faxed from every police station from Michigan to Florida.
Okay.
We had the state police crime lab going through our computer to see if he might have been lured away. So,
okay,
we're doing everything.
Wow. Well, I tell you, it's just really, you guys went through a very traumatic experience.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine now here with your son, he walked away on his own.
Yeah.
But just think about the families that someone comes and abducts their child.
Yes.
So, you know, if you were going through all of that.
Yeah.
But the whole thing here, the bottom line is, I don't know where they are.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right.
That's the whole thing is knowing. I just need to know where you are and what you're doing. I need to know that you're safe. You know,
right.
I need to know all those great things. I just, you know, it would be very, very difficult for me as a mother or a parent to just sit there and say you don't care. How do you, you know, how do you just, I can't imagine those parents that put their children out and you don't know where they are.
Right.
You know, how do you,
right,
do that? I don't get that.
And let me just, for your audience, let me just read the letter that he left us, because this kind,
okay,
of just really puts you in the frame of mind of how it, this is how it began for me. This was his letter. It said, "Dad, this is by far the most difficult decision I have ever had to make. I've come to this point by my own stupidity and laziness. I struggled this semester by far the most I ever have throughout my schooling days. After realizing I couldn't salvage it, I've decided I need to leave. Although I love you with all my heart, I can't bear to see your reaction to my screw-up. I would rather brave this tough world alone than feel like I've let you down or failed you. My frustration runs deep, and though it may seem like I am taking it out on you, I am not. It is just the fact that I don't know how else to handle my current situation. I figured if I kept it under wraps, I could somehow turn it around. Please don't feel down or as if this is your fault. I've reached this point alone, and so I must deal with it alone too. Every bird has to leave the nest sometime. My time is now. I woke up every day hoping that I still had a chance to change it all. Thank you for all your support, and maybe one day this will all be behind me. Please don't hate me. Love, David. P.S.
Oh, wow.
I'll keep in touch to let you know I'm okay. P.S.S. The car is at the Greyhound station in Ann Arbor." And so he,
wow,
hadn't gotten in contact with us once over this 5 days. And so we're thinking the worst.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because, of course, that could almost sound like a suicide note as well.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
and the statistics for freshmen in college are really bad about that.
Right. That is so disheartening to think, you know, you start thinking, what did I do that my child could not come to me,
yeah,
and just say school was just hard.
Right.
I can remember a time when one of my children had entered college. a freshman year, and I had shared with her the difficulty and the mistakes that you make in your first year.
Mm-hmm.
And to make a long story short, that first semester after those grades came, all she could do was sit there and cry. And, you know, my whole thing at that point, and she humbled herself so much. I mean, she just, at that point, it was like, you know, I give, you know, I was trying, but I give up, you know.
Right.
But from that point, it was an awakening for her to listen that mom and dad know best. And we were
mm-hmm.
trying to explain that to you so,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that you wouldn't make these kind of mistakes. It's not always that mom and dad are trying to get in your business. But we're going to have to take a break, and when we come back, I'll finish that little bit, and we'll continue talking because we've got to find David before the end of the show.
Okay.
So give us a call at 347-989-1363, and we will be right back in continuing our story with David.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Tune in to KKHT 100.7 and listen to Ken Marsh, award-winning author, international keynote speaker, and host of The Word on Fearless Networking, a show about putting Christian networking principles into action. Airing Monday through Friday, 7 to 7:15 p.m. on KKHT 100.7, The Word.
Having a daughter is one of the most precious gifts a mother will receive in a lifetime. Sometimes it helps to have a roadmap in the parenting process. The Lesson Plan, written by Gwen Gistarb, is a dependable tool that will assist you on your journey. It includes 10 interesting segments of poems, metaphors, short stories, lessons, and activities that mothers and daughters will find exciting and informative. The Lesson Plan is available at iUniverse.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, and most other internet bookstores across the country. To find out more about Gwen Gistarb and the Lesson Plan, go to GwenGistarb.net. Thank you, and enjoy the gift of your daughter. She is God's gift for a lifetime.
Okay, we're back with Making Life Easy with Gwen Gistarb. My guest today is Dave Moore. Sharing with my audience the journey of trying to find his son, David, who had basically not done so well in freshman year in college and didn't know how to confront his parents about flunking out, basically. So what we're doing now, we've gone through this journey, and so we're almost to the end of this journey. So Dave, quickly, let's kind of talk about how did we find David.
Okay, well, it was day five now, and, I got up that morning. It was Tuesday morning. This had begun on Friday. And I just wanted to go back and begin to search again. So we're continuing to contact shelters in Atlanta. We're calling, every day we're calling shelters and, any news and, continuing to call. And we're checking with the police departments. And we went back to the university and we're checking with the university. And that morning I even called his old high school and talked to the liaison officer there. And he
mm-hmm.
was glad that I brought him into the loop, even though I'd been talking to all these other police departments. And now I've become so desperate that I'd even contacted a psychic and made an appointment with a psychic, and that was something that I didn't even believe in that. But I was that desperate, and we had no clue. We still didn't know anything, and no one had given us any chance of anything happening. So it was Tuesday afternoon, and I was just getting ready to walk out the door to go to the psychic appointment. But right as I got to the door, it's like something stopped me at the door. And it was like inside of me, I heard this voice say, call one more shelter. So I just decided I had time. I walked back to the table where our shelters list was, and I looked
mm-hmm.
on the next name on the list that I'd been calling, and it was the Atlanta Church of God. And so I decided to go ahead and call one more number, and I called the number, and a lady named Paige answered the phone. And so I began to tell Paige everything that I'd been through and how we'd found the letter and how I'd went to Dayton and Atlanta and back to Michigan and all the police departments that I'd had involved. And for some reason, I just felt like going deeper this time. I just began to tell Paige everything and read her the letter. And Paige was crying on her end of the phone, and I was crying on my end of the phone. But when I finished, finally, Paige said to me, she said, "Sir," she said, "I don't know you," she said, "but if you come back to Atlanta searching for your son, you come straight to this church." She said, "You can stay with us. We'll feed you. We'll give you a car. We'll put somebody in the car with you that knows the streets of Atlanta, and if your son's here, we'll find him." And so when I hung up the phone with Paige, tears just streaming down my face, I just felt like I had finally hit the wall, and I just couldn't go any farther. But this Christian woman who didn't even know me but wanted to help me in such a dramatic way had touched me so deeply. And I looked in front of me on the table, and there was a Bible sitting there in front of me on the table. And my wife had been raised in church and been saved, but I hadn't been. But I saw that Bible, and I just reached out, and I picked that Bible up. And I picked it up, and I pointed it in the air, and I pointed it right towards heaven. And I said, "God, I said, I want to be just like this lady, Paige. I said, I always want to be part of the solution, never part of the problem again. I said, if you'll save my son, I'll serve you for the rest of my life. I said, I'll never leave you. I'll always be part of the solution, never part of the problem again." And I set the Bible down on that table, and immediately the phone rang, and my son had come home.
Oh, my God.
And I just fell down on my knees, and I just threw my hands up in the air and began to thank God and shout. And I pulled the cigarettes out of my pocket, and I tore them up and threw them away, and I told God, "Never again." And right there on the spot, I was delivered from smoking. I was delivered from drinking. I was delivered from anger and hatred that had just been with me my whole life. And God had just, right there at that kitchen table, given me a miracle and changed my life forever.
Wow. Wow. Now I want to jump up and down here. I'm just so happy that he made it back home. He came home on his own.
Yes, and one of the amazing things was is, well, first, God had, when I surrendered my will at that table for God's will, God gave me an instant miracle on the spot. And I would find out later that that money that I was handing out on the streets of Atlanta, my son was on those streets of Atlanta. And while he was on the streets, someone came up to him and asked him, said, "Does your son or does your dad drive a red Blazer?" And my son was just shocked. And he said, "Yes, he does. How did you know that?" He said, "He's handing money out to people all over the streets of Atlanta to find you."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so my son realized that, you know, we loved him and he could come home.
Wow, so someone had told him this, that you had been there handing out money.
Yeah.
So he did know that you were there looking for him.
Yes.
And now he's back home because he now knows that he can come home and talk to his parents.
Yes, and that, and I, my initial reaction was to run out the door and go find. What had happened was is he had just gotten off a bus in Ann Arbor, and his friend, who we'd been in contact with, called me because he came to his friend's apartment. Right when I surrendered to God, the phone rang, and his friend called me and said, "Little Dave is here. He's at my apartment. He's home." And so that's how I knew. But then the liaison officer that I had talked to that morning, he was on his way home from work. He decided to go home a different route, and he saw my son walking down the road from that apartment, walking home, and he pulled over, and he picked him up, and he brought him home. And when he came home to my house with him, he told me, he said, "God led me to your son to find him and bring him home."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
This is an amazing story.
Yes, it is.
Amazing. It should be a movie.
Yes.
You would deserve, yes. Children, not just parents, but children need to know, they need to give their parents a little bit more credit. You know, basically, I mean, we've done the punishing, we've done all these different things along the way, and he knew that he was going to disappoint you, but something I've always, and I always told my children as they were growing up, because if my mother and dad told us the same thing, there's nothing too bad or so bad that you cannot come to us.
Yes.
And I think that children need to hear that a little bit more. I mean, as parents, you know, we try to do our best in raising them because we have to set guidelines. We've got to set, you know, we have to, you know, let them know where the line, the mark is, you know, here, what you can do and what you can't do and all this kind of stuff. But nothing's too bad.
Right.
That you can't come. You can't come. And I'm so sorry that he sent you through all of this, and I'm sure that he was very saddened by the idea that he knew his dad was out there looking and searching for him as you were. And
yeah.
I'm just so glad that it turned out to be a happy ending.
Yeah.
Because we've been on a long journey here. So now tell me the book actually go through all of these series of things that you had done to find your son.
Yes.
Okay,
and
so
there's a lot more stories to it too that we weren't able to touch on today. A lot of more individual things that happened along the way that were just unbelievable.
Right. Well, it sounds like it's a great book. Can you give us your website so that people can, you know, go on and order the book?
Okay, yeah, it's thefatherslovebook.com. thefatherslovebook.com. And there you can see author info, and you can connect on the Facebook fan page. You can order the book. You can watch a video trailer there. And you can even go to my blog. I write about some of the miracles that I've been a part of since then. So, there's a lot of information there. And it's also available on Amazon.com.
Right, because I see you do some other things that you visit and play with, you know, the sick and the lost and the hospitals and jails and the prison, wherever basically that you're called to come, you're out there to help. Now, did all of this happen because of what happened with David?
Yes, it did. That Sunday after my son came home, I just went to church to thank God, and I just ran to the altar and gave my heart to Christ. And a few years later, I became a chaplain. And shortly after that, my son came to an Easter play at our church, and he got saved. And now he's graduated college with a bachelor's degree in church leadership, and he's passed his ordination test, and now he's a minister in the Church of God in Lakeland, Florida.
Now, is this David?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, so God did exceedingly abundantly more than I asked. I asked him to save my son, but he also saved me. And then he also put us all in ministry after that.
Wow. That is absolutely amazing.
Yes.
I mean, that really helped him along the way. Wow, that is really amazing. So basically, using that word amazing here in your paperwork, I mean, when I saw amazing, true story, I mean, it is amazing. And
yes.
I do understand it's award-winning, so I'm going to look for the movie in years to come or however soon that is going to happen. So, Dave, it's been wonderful talking to you, and I hope that the journey continues here with helping others that you're on your path to helping. And like I said, I'm going to look for that movie. I'm sure you'll probably send emails out and all that kind of stuff that the movie is done, and, you know, you need to be a part of that movie, so you need to be there to make sure that everything. You need to be the director, actually, to make sure that everything goes the way that you thought that it was supposed to go. So, give us your email as well.
Okay, my email is ipsimomo@sbcglobal.com. That's ipsimomo@sbcglobal.net. They can also contact me on the website, thefatherslovebook.com. There's a link to connect with me there also.
Okay. Dave, it's been amazing. It's been wonderful having this conversation with you. And the great thing about this whole story is that you found your son on the end, and I'm just so excited about that part. My stomach has been nervous the whole time we're talking about this, and I'm listening, and I'll get chills at some point. And I can only imagine that you went through other things along the way, which I'll have to get the book so that I can read about all the other things you encountered along the way. But thank you so much for being on the show. And, you know, please, by all means, keep in touch. Let us know what you're doing with the movie.
I will, Gwen. I will. I appreciate you having me on, and I just want you and all your listeners to know that there's always hope with God.
Always.
Yeah.
Whatever we need is there if you just ask the right person.
Yeah.
So thank you again. Thank you so much for listening to Making Life Easy with Gwanga Starr. Please get in, keep in touch by visiting my website at www.makinglifeeasywithgwangastarr.com. Also, I want you to listen next week when my guest is going to be Heidi Thomas. She's an author of The Power of Breath Awareness. It's a practical guide for adults and children. So please stay tuned for next week. Also, go to my blog and give me some comments and recommendations as to what you'd like to hear about. Let me know if you would like to be a guest on my blog. I'd love to have you. You can also order my book, The Lesson Plan for Mothers and Teenage Daughters, at www.gwangastarr.net. And be sure to visit me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Also, please tune in every day on the Tough Talk Radio Network for a team of other hosts on different subjects. So please, by all means, listen. I'm sure we've got an answer for everything that's out there and what's on your mind. So remember, in my heart, in my soul, that children are the most precious gift that God will give to a parent in a lifetime. Thank you for listening, and have a great night, and I will talk with you next week.
This has been another edition of Making Life Easy with Gwanga Starr, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest, please go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.